Welcome to Confessions of a Cyber Psychologist. Today, I'm chatting again with Professor Linda Kay from Edgehill University about the psychology of emoji processing. Linda is the Associate Head of Psychology at Edgehill University and the author of a number of books, chapters, and journal articles in cyber psychology, the latest book of which we're talking about today, The Psychology of Emoji Processing. Welcome back, Linda. I'm so delighted to have you back on board.
Oh, thank you again for inviting me. It's really nice to be back here again. I really enjoyed our chat last time. So what's not to love about talking about emoji?
Exactly. So talking about our previous podcast, Linda, you talked last time about your research and work in emoji. But before we get chatting about your book, can you tell me a little bit more about who you are? Following on from our previous podcast, and what initially sparked your interest in studying the psychology of emoji use?
No, I mean, my interests generally are quite wide in cyber psychology. I started my career looking a lot at sort of digital gaming and the psychology experiences there. Then I sort of migrated a bit more into more of the sort of social psychology around social identity in sort of different online spaces. And then I kind of transitioned a little bit more then into sort of social media, which is I'm still kind of doing that kind of research. But the sort of emoji stuff started really from colleagues I was working with at that time who had interests in language processing and also the colleagues who had interested in autism. And so the sort of shape of research sort of kind of just came about from lots of conversations and things there. So now those conversations we had those many years ago are still coming to fruition in the research we're doing. So it's been it's a very long drawn out process of research, but we found lots of interesting things along the way, which is why there's so much that's now come together for the book. So
one thing I want to clarify, because you talk about emoji in a singular context, but a lot of people, and me included, talk about emojis as a plural. Why do you use the word emoji and not emojis?
My understanding is emoji can be singular and plural. So I'm using it in both cases. Though I think there are debates on this. I see some people do use emojis, but actually, you know, it is acceptable to use emoji to refer to the plural as well. And I just don't like emojis in terms of it just doesn't seem right with an S on the end. So I don't know. That's where I lean with it, but it's just not necessarily right or wrong way of doing it. I just prefer that one.
Oh, that's fair enough, because it's how you hear it in your head. Because I struggle with saying emoji in the plural, because I've always just said emojis because it's lots of them. But I kind of want to clarify that, because you talk about emoji in a general sense referring to a plural. So I think there might be some confusion as to why you're using that. So thank you for clarifying.
No, it's fine. No, it's a very useful clarification. No, I've just got used to saying it now for the plural. So it sounds right to me now. So it's really useful to clarify to avoid confusion.
Brilliant. I think you will persuade me, I'm sure.
If anybody can, I can.
So why did you decide to write a book on the psychology of emoji processing?
I think I thought it was useful to do because there's lots of different ways that, not just in psychology, but generally that people research the psychology of emoji. And it seemed to me that the reading I did myself, there was no kind of go-to resource that did that. So I've had to be kind of navigating around lots of different fields, some in sort of the sort of social neuroscience field, some in the sort of affective science field, some in the psycholinguistics, some in interpersonal perceptions. There's all these very quite disparate areas, even under psychology. And just finding something that kind of brought those together, there wasn't really anything. So I thought it was a useful opportunity to do that. And just useful to have everything in one place, really. Because again, I didn't really see that there was much that did that. And I think I understand why, because synthesizing it was not easy. So I think most people probably thought, I'm not going to bother doing this, quite understandably. it's been a useful experience as well, because I always find writing books and having the opportunity to do that brings things together a bit in my own head, and that helps me shape my own research. So it's a useful exercise.
Why do you think it's important for us to understand emoji use in our written and especially our online communication?
Well, I think part of the reason I'm sort of interested in it, I think, is because we tend to think about online communication as being a bit impoverished to sort of our real world, in inverted commas, experiences. But actually what I'm sort of interested in is actually really properly researching that and really trying to understand, are they impoverished? You know, are there actually kind of rich sensory experiences we can get from that? So it's sort of trying to answer that question a little bit. And when you think about the fact that so many of our interactions take place online in lots of different platforms and ways, I think it's sort of important to understand that, so that we can be better informed about, you know, what the limitations of that are, but what the opportunities are as well. So, yeah, I think it's in the context of us using them a lot, it's important to understand it.
We spoke last time a little bit about, we use emojis when we send a message, but we don't think about how someone receives those emojis. And I think, I wonder if that's part of why we need to understand more about the reading of those emojis within a message.
Yeah, so definitely the thing I've sort of noted over the last few years is that we sometimes aren't particularly good at sort of distinguishing between those two things. You know, a lot of research looks at emoji and looks at the use of them, so from a sender perspective. But from the receiver perspective, understanding the actual emotional process of that has been less explicit in the way that researchers, I think, had typically looked at that or tried to explain that. So yeah, I think there's research that thinks about the sort of perceptions around senders, around how it makes messages more clear or less ambiguous, or it helps support interpersonal sorts of processing and things like that. But yeah, perhaps less on the actual, you know, inherent kind of processing of emoji. So, which seems sort of strange actually, because, you know, there's so many of these big, well-established areas in psychology that look at things like face processing and psycholinguistics that use really useful methods and paradigms to test that, but haven't really up to them been applied so much with the study of emoji. So it seemed a bit of a gap. So yeah, I kind of wanted to use those same more rigorous sort of paradigms to understand emoji so that we could, you know, it helps you then compare, you know, to what extent do they function in a similar way to other established kinds of stimuli.
And forms of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, whether it's faces or words or whatever. Yeah.
Because it's then a shortcut to something you want to say or putting across an emotion that doesn't really come across in the written form.
Yeah, it's emoji are interesting because we can use them in so many different ways. And, you know, the kind of question that we've been trying to ask is, are they emotional? And it's kind of a yes and no one on that. Like everything in psychology is not a straightforward answer, obviously. But no, on the kind of implicit level, like on a sort of subconscious level, what we're finding is we don't seem to process them in the same way, say faces or motion or emotionally laden words. But actually from a kind of conscious processing, we tend to attach emotional labels to them. So in that sense, on that kind of slower processing, so to speak, they can have that kind of emotional value within sort of that interpersonal communication. But yeah, it's interesting about how they don't seem to entirely function in the same way on that kind of subconscious level. But yeah, but I mean, the kind of value and the purpose and function that they have does vary very considerably. I mean, some people use them as part of kind of punctuation and, you know, they can be kind of iconic in the way they represent things. They can be supplementary in the way they represent things. So yeah, they're very diverse in the way that they're A, used, but then B, interpreted. So that makes them interesting to study, I think.
That kind of ties into the next question, which I have for you, is why we use emoji symbols in our text messages to kind of convey our thoughts and emotions. And they often individual differences in how we interpret and respond to emojis. Has that changed over time, or is that just similar in terms of how we've used emojis over the last however many years?
Yeah, I mean, I think differences in interpretation are possibly to do with the fact that the emoji themselves have changed. Obviously, they kind of evolve, as platforms develop and all that kind of stuff. But no, I mean, I do get asked quite a lot about sort of generational differences and age-related differences on emoji use and interpretation. And there are some, you do tend to find some sort of patterns on there, usually in relation to quite specific emoji. So really good examples there are the skull emoji. That's a very recent one. Where those people who might be less familiar with this, a lot of the younger generation might use the skull emoji when they're describing something that's hilarious to represent that I'm dead, you know, dead from laughing or whatever, which is not necessarily so common in maybe an older generation. So yeah, I think there's differences in that respect. But even on a kind of, you know, when you're even just asking people how you'd label different emotions attached to different emoji, sometimes you just see quite diverse differences in that. So then, you know, it's interesting that this don't seem to be particularly uniform. Uniformality or universality in the way that people attach emotion to them. So, which then makes it difficult when using communication, when you might be using something and it gets misinterpreted.
That's interesting that you use the word attaching emotions to emoji, and that's how I'll read it. I would attach specific emotions. So if I had to see someone send me a skull and crossbone emoji, I would kind of be a bit offended. It's like, they don't like me.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, this is the issue, isn't it? It's like, you don't want to lead. People say, oh, you use them to help reduce ambiguity, but in some cases, they might actually increase it. And it's interesting, actually, I was speaking to one of my students the other day, and she's very open about her autism and things. And she said, oh, actually, I hate emoji because actually it makes it more confusing to me about understanding people's emotion. Which is interesting because actually the thing that sort of the initial thing that started off this whole program of research was what my colleague, who actually is an autism researcher, she said, oh, it would be interesting to look at this because it might help people who have autism understand emotion. And I think a lot of people often assume that. Now, it might just be my student who is, you know, has her own kind of preferences on that. But she said, actually, it makes it more difficult because she doesn't, you know, and it might not have anything to do with her autism, but she, you know, she's quite open on that. So she's quite interesting. So yeah, when you have all these different ways people are different, and of course people have different sort of emotional competencies as well, whether it's to do with empathy or alexithymia, you know, people who might struggle to, you know, interpret emotion and things like that. So yeah, there's all sorts of individual variations there, I think.
I suppose also not having a universal playbook on what this emoji means. So there's no kind of description above it. So you can't click on the emoji and go, actually, this means that I'm laughing my head off or I'm dying from laughter. And there's just an interpretation of that. Thinking about that is, how do emojis influence our perception of the sender's personality and emotional state, assuming that they're not autistic? And are there differences between implicit and explicit evaluations of emojis?
So in terms of perceptions, again, as with everything with emoji, it depends what the context is that they're being used in. So there's research that looks at how the use of certain emoji sort of relates to perceptions based on the kind of relationship you have with the sender. So if it's a romantic relationship or if it's a brand communication or whatever it might be. And you do tend to find it elicits perceptions of things like warmth and sort of those kind of warm perceptions a lot of the time, particularly if it's, you know, obviously happy emoji and things like that. In terms of more generally, I mean, we've looked in our previous research at happy emoji on things like Facebook, and, you know, it helps people understand people's level of things like agreeableness and openness and things like that. So, but obviously, again, that depends entirely what context it's being used in, what's being said, how much you actually know that person in the first place. I mean, our research we looked at, or most of the research in this looks at it as a kind of first impression basis, somebody you don't know at all. But yeah, I think it depends if you know the person, of course, or not as well. And yeah, so generally, you know, they tend to be associated with warmer perceptions, obviously depending on how they're being used.
It's really interesting that you change the way you kind of read an emoji and how in the context of the text, depending on how well you know them. Because I'm just thinking about people who send me emojis and I kind of hear their voice or hear the way that they express things in that emoji that they've included in their text message. So it kind of brings their words to life a bit more. But if it's someone who's completely new to me, it's harder to, I think, interpret that, which I'd never thought about before.
No, I think it is interesting. I found it fascinating, actually. I think there's something really interesting about that kind of the auditory perceptions that you have, because I can't remember who I was speaking to about this. It wasn't long ago. But actually, people I know on things like Twitter or LinkedIn, who I might not have met in the real world, I almost kept sort of trying to read when they post things on there, I can almost hear a voice of what I think that they sound like, and I have no idea if that is what they sound like or not. But if it's people I do know, I will hear what they say audibly in my head. So it's just quite interesting, actually. But anyway, that's just a kind of an aside thing.
It's an interesting aside, because I think we do that naturally. We kind of almost have an association with the words, the written words, to bring them to life a bit more, because otherwise they might feel a bit dull or lacking emotion or lacking any context.
Yeah. And again, I think there's two things there. One is that's another kind of nice example of where those online interactions might not necessarily be impoverished, because it does still has a sensory experience around it that isn't just visual. But actually, I think the idea of imagery, whether that's visual imagery or auditory imagery, actually people have differences in that. So not everybody can visualize or have that level of imagination. And so again, you'd have individual differences there on people's abilities to actually have those vivid kinds of imaginations. So yeah, that will be very different as well. So that might come really to life for some people and might not be something other people can do. So that will be kind of interesting to look at, actually.
Thinking about what we've just been speaking about, can emojis help reduce misunderstandings in text-based conversations? And if so, how?
Yes and no. I suppose when they're the more kind of potential, when it's you kind of using them as a way to reduce ambiguity of the sarcasm and things like that, then yes, they can be useful to avoid misinterpretation or reduce ambiguity. So sarcasm is a good example where you might want to use them just to clarify. But then, you know, the other thing is they aren't always going to kind of clarify. Again, if there's particular ones that are used differently by different people. I mean, I think one really good example, this is the example I use with my students, where it gets basically divides the room in half, is the emoji that looks like that, whether it's a prayer emoji or if it's a high five emoji. And we have debates about what that is. And so, I mean, I think that maybe isn't the best example, given the fact that people know that there's people use that one in different ways. So kind of aware of, oh, they've used it in that way, and I understand why they have done. But yeah, there'll be other emoji that people will just use differently, or other people are like, I don't even know what that stands for, or things like that. So in that case, it's very unlikely to actually help clarify and might end up confusing more than anything else. The diversities in emoji interpretation and use are very broad. So I think with the basic kind of ones, we're fairly safe, but then beyond that, it starts to get a bit less clear.
Which brings me to the next question, because we talk about emojis being used to express complex emotions in our digital communications, because like you were saying, in terms of prayer or thank you or high five, it's really difficult. Well, that's kind of a relatively simple emoji that could be misinterpreted. So what about really complex emotions?
This is more anecdotal than anything, but I don't tend to see people using emojis so much to describe complex emotion. I think people would tend to fall more to using words and or speaking verbally and things, I think, in that case. Because I don't think the emoji particularly do actually represent, in many ways, the more complex emoji. Anyway, I don't think they are many that represent those. So, you know, they can be iconic of those more sort of basic emotions and things. But yes, when it comes to complex ones, which often require more discourse around them anyway, because usually if it is complex emotion, people want more information to understand it more and that kind of thing anyway. So they wouldn't tend to get used as much in those cases, or certainly wouldn't be the only thing that would express that or be used to describe it. So yes, I don't think it is so much the case that would crop up anyway. Again, I'm talking anecdotally. I don't know from the academic research, but yeah.
Because I'm kind of guessing that if you are trying to express something and trying to do in text over text message, the context of what you're saying may define what the meaning is that you put behind that emoji insertion into that text message.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it goes back to that point that understanding the context of emoji use is really important, because it will absolutely impact on that interpretation and things. So yeah, so again, in that kind of case of complex emotion, there would very likely be almost a whole scenario around that, which would offer the explanation really more so than emoji.
And there are some people who put a lot of emojis into their communication, whether it's text-based messages or social media posts. What are the potential drawbacks or limitations on relying really heavily on the amount of emoji that you include in your text-based messages?
I don't know if there are risks so much, because actually, sometimes people are kind of worried about, and it goes back to a similar thing about the use of textisms and things like that, is like, people use them because they don't understand language and they're not going to, they're not learning emotions best and things like that. It tends to kind of go into that sort of realm. But actually, I think you do need to understand things like emotion to be able to know what emoji to use and therefore how to interpret them and things like that. People were worried that, these young people who, they're not going to know how to spell words because they're using all these. But actually, you need to understand what the word is and how it's spelled to be able to be creative in using them. So I think the same kind of thing applies to emoji, that, I don't think there's a risk there in terms of not being able to, that kind of replacing the processes and expression of emotion and things like that. In terms of other risks, nothing else sort of jumps to mind so much. I suppose it's how then that might be perceived by other people. And, most people, I think, tend to be quite adaptive on that. So I know, again, anecdotally from my experiences, when I've got a friend who doesn't tend to use emoji much, if at all, I very rarely use them in messages to her, but I'll use them a lot with other people. So I think people do tend to kind of adapt. And so that probably is less of a risk anyway.
You are a lot more emotionally aware than I am, because I don't. I just blanket everyone with emoji. In text, I don't consider how many they use. Like, I'm using it because this is expressing what I'm saying.
There we go. I like that.
We spoke previously, and you mentioned earlier in our conversation that there may be cultural age-related differences in emoji interpretation and use. Are there anything, or is anything that we should be aware of when it comes to different cultures and different ages?
I guess just having that, respecting the fact that there might be differences. And, I think when it comes to cross-generational or cross-cultural, just, erring on the side of caution is always the kind of best advice. And I'd always use that, when thinking about using emoji within professional contexts as well. Erring on the side of caution and avoiding them is probably best to start with, at least till kind of rapport is being built up or there's a better understanding of who that other person is and their kind of their characteristics and things like that. And I think that the same principle probably applies to across age and cultural boundaries as well. I'm not an expert really myself in understanding the kind of cultural differences. I have colleagues who do more research looking at those sorts of things. But generally, I think just with any kind of, interactions, whether it's language-based or customs-based, it's just being respectful that there might be different customs.
I think that's one of the things we all need to consider a lot more, is different cultures and different ways of interpreting even text-based messages or how we say things. Because there might be people who will interpret one phrase in a different way to someone else, based on context and history and...
Without a doubt. Yeah,
so definitely. The same applies to emoji, and it's not a universal language.
Absolutely, and I definitely say it's not universal. I think even within the same generation or same country, we've got tons of different ways people interpret it. So yeah, it's not even a kind of cultural difference. It's just, it's just on a very kind of inherent level. It's certainly not universal at all.
And then looking ahead, given the rapid evolution of digital communication, especially things like AI, how do you envision the role and processing of emoji changing in the coming years?
Well, I think one thing that will be interesting is about how the software, what software developments there might be, and whether there's sort of a broader range of emoji and whether they sort of change in that respect. I mean, I think what's been nice over the past few years is seeing that they've diversified the look of emoji to represent different color skins and different sort of things like physical disabilities and things. So I think representation is something that I've definitely seen improve in emoji, and I would imagine that will continue to be the case, so people feel better represented. And so I think that will be interesting in the context of, an inclusive society. In terms of other sorts of developments and things like that, I did have another thing in mind I was going to say on this one, and I can't remember what it was now. But anyway.
It's all right. Oh, one of the things that I've noticed, because I take the audio translations of the podcasts and I put them into generative AI, yeah, and sort of say, give me a summary so that I can kind of keep track of this, the overall arching themes of what we spoke about. And it's not necessarily that I put that onto social media, but it's just to give me an idea of what the kind of things I can talk about in the social media posts. But part of that is I prompt for it to give me emojis or symbols. And each time they're slightly different. But I wonder if there's something interesting that could come out of all of that process of how AI translates text-based things or where it comes from into a symbol, and whether or not that will be kind of universalize, if that's the word, how we interpret emoji going forward. Just a thought.
Yeah, that's a very, very intelligent thought and much better than my answer. So you've answered your question much better than I did. Yeah, that would be really interesting, actually. I didn't even know that generative AI would throw out emoji, actually. That's something I've learned today. That sounds like a really useful use of AI, by the way. I might need to start doing that myself. That's very interesting, you know, and actually it does then kind of suggest why this sort of research is important, because how the kind of programming and interpretation of that within at the back end of AI would, AI in the coding of that would be really important then to make sure that that was representative of the emotions that were being, and the sentiment maybe that's being expressed. That's very interesting. Yes. You may need to think about that a lot.
That's the key thing, is about the sentiment that's being assessed, because generative AI has no emotions inherently. It's very data driven. It's very large language model driven, very predictive text driven. So it's kind of interpreting in some ways the words that are being used and giving it a symbol to represent those words, rather than there's an emotional attachment to those words. So I wonder if there's something that will come out of that in terms of this is what that emoji means, because that's what ChatGPT has told us it means. And I wonder if maybe that'll be something that's, if you have a general playbook of this is what this emoji means, it might be easier for those who have autism or kind of struggle to understand others' emotions. They might be able to then see a little bit more or interpret. I don't know. I'm just wondering if that might be the rolling future of emoji.
It might be. You know, I think you've posed a very interesting point there, and not something I'd thought about before, actually. Usually a lot of the kind of analysis software on that can't interpret things like emoji and things like that. More advanced ones can do, but it's interesting that generative AI is able to kind of bring some kind of interpretation of it by the suggestion of certain ones. So that's very interesting. Oh, you give me something definitely very interesting to think about. Thank you.
Oh, added value. Excellent.
Absolutely.
And in terms of the future of cyberpsychology, because we kind of didn't really touch on this in our previous conversation, I really want to find out from you what that looks like for you in terms of cyberpsychology in industry and business. Where do you see it going?
So I think there's lots of different ways it can go. I'm certainly seeing more advancement in sort of consumer sort of circles in terms of the way cyberpsychology can enter into the idea of sort of marketing and things like that. I suppose I'm quite biased on that. I get that insight from the sort of things I do and the people I work with. So I definitely see there being much more advancement that can be made there, but that seems to be making some steps that way. I think within sort of organizational sort of psychology, sort of industrial organizational psychology, some advancements there as well. I know you'll be kind of up to date with a lot of those things based on the kind of work you do, so you'll know but more about than I will. But yeah, definitely seeing more interest in those sorts of things, you know, techno stress and all these sorts of things. And definitely in things to do with sort of digital well-being policies and things like that. You know, people, I think companies are getting more and more vigilant about the importance of these things. So I definitely see that being a big advancement as well in the future. Those are just a couple of examples that come to mind, but there are obviously plenty of others as well.
And there's a couple of things that you offer to businesses as well as a consultant. So what are those things?
Yeah, so that typically is within the kind of consumer cyber psychology realm, really, to do with online marketing. So how we can capture online data as a way of sort of doing more sort of persona-based marketing. So how you can sort of segment your markets based on those sort of psychographic characteristics of people that we know we can pick up from different digital traces. So yeah, sort of consulting with marketers or even brands, I guess, on how they might want to use that as an evidence for segmenting markets in different ways. So that kind of stuff is sort of the stuff I'm kind of excited about and the kind of where I tend to apply it. But actually, you know, beyond that, I've kind of pivoting a little bit into more sort of digital adoption and innovation realm. So how we can kind of use theories from sort of digital acceptance literature to help organizations know more about organizational readiness around digital technology and how it can help overcome barriers to acceptance and therefore support digital innovation. So I'm kind of interested in that as well. So yeah, and anything like that is my bag.
And if someone wants to know more about what you do in that area, they get in touch with you via your consultancy website rather than through the university.
It could be both. So no, I mean, I'm very visible online. So if people type in Professor Linda Kay, they'll find something there. No, I mean, I do consultancy via my university and privately. So it's up to people how they want to choose on that one.
And then going back to your emoji book. See, I'm using emoji, not emojis now.
I'm impressed.
Where can listeners and podcast watchers purchase your book?
The book is available on the publisher website. Palgrave Macmillan is a publisher. Or again, if you type in the psychology of emoji processing into a search engine, you'll probably find it. Or certainly on my website. On there, you can find it. And I've given sort of summaries and a few resources on there as well associated with the book for people if they want to use those as well.
Linda, thank you so much for joining me in Confessions of a Cyber Psychologist again. It was so fabulous to catch up with you, and I really look forward to chatting again in the future about your next book and whatever else you're doing, exciting things.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on again, and I appreciate the chance to be able to talk about everything to do with emoji. What's not to like?
What is not to like, exactly?